Welcome to the College Baseball Nation podcast. My name is John Peters. I'm here with Kyle McKelvey. This week, we're taking a look back at the Supers, but most importantly, we're looking ahead to the College World Series. Let's talk some college baseball. Kyle, we made it. It's mid-June. The postseason is down to 8 teams. The College World Series gets kicked off this weekend.
So excited.
It's like, it doesn't feel real. Like, I feel like this whole season has gone by now in the blink of an eye. Like, even more than normal years, it just felt like just yesterday it was opening day.
I know. I mean, we've both been pretty busy. This season, like doing college baseball stuff and watching college baseball, but also in our personal lives. So the listeners might not know, but John just defended his thesis yesterday and he's now Dr. John Peters.
True.
Congrats to John.
I did get my PhD under check. So yeah, for those of you who don't know,
we are the nerd science,
neuroscientist by day, college baseball reporter by night.
Yeah, so now that that's done, you can focus a little bit more on this.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for it. There, I think, were some pretty big stories from the Super Regionals, and I don't think there was any bigger than NC State upsetting Arkansas. That's fair, right? I mean, that was just...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Obviously, no one saw it coming. We didn't see it coming. Everyone knew it was possible. Like, when we ranked our best 16 teams remaining in the tournament, we did have NC State ranked number 8, which was... a really tough matchup, obviously, for Arkansas, but we had Arkansas ranked number 1, and we definitely thought Arkansas was going to win that series. I mean,
yeah.
It's probably as like a outside, you know, objective viewer of the game a little bit. I mean, as much as I can be, I was really devastated for Arkansas. Like, I don't know, it's not very often that I feel like I find myself rooting for underdogs more often because that's kind of fun, right? But like, man, this Arkansas team and Kevin Copps just like laid like absolutely everything on the line. Felt like everyone was against NC State. Like, I mean, obviously the crowd, but just like all the odds, and NC State managed to win the series.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think because this team was so good, we've heard a lot about them, and they were really good last year. They were really good the year before that in Omaha. So like, we know a lot of the individual stories. So we've kind of like grown close to them just by proxy, like by listening to people talk about them. I feel like nationally a lot of people didn't know how good NC State was, and they showed everybody, like they showed how good they really were. Like, they have a really good offense that's meshing right at the right time,
and like they have the label of underdog down like to a T, because they started off in ACC play 1-8, obviously had a huge run to finish 3rd in the ACC overall. They lost game 1 of this series 21-2, which, I mean, at some point, like, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know a thing or two about baseball. And yeah, they saved their bullpen because they had a pretty short bullpen. They kind of have only really 5 pitchers they can trust in that NC State team. And once they lost that lead in a big way in game 1, they didn't throw out any of their star bullpen arms. But it's never a good look to lose by a football score in game 1, and NC State had to come back from that.
Yeah, I forgot who it was, but it might have been Aaron Fitt. He was tweeting about it, that NC State sticking with one of their pitchers and just letting him kind of get rocked a little bit on that Friday night beatdown game kind of saved them a little bit. Like, you don't want to just waste a bunch of pitchers in a blowout. Like, I think that was kind of the like what they chose to do there, like to help save their bullpen for the
sacrificial lamb.
Yeah, essentially, like, who cares about ERAs at this point? Like, wins are what matter.
Yeah,
so it's kind of cool
for sure. It was a well-managed series for NC State. I mean, yeah, that clearly didn't have to go that way, so hats off to the Wolfpack for earning that huge upset. But I think elsewhere, it's probably the most surprising team that's in Omaha is Stanford. I mean, if you look at all these other teams, we had...
They're a 9 seed.
Yeah, But like, if you were to take it at the beginning of the year, for instance, yeah, we have Stanford in our top 50. Stanford had absolutely no offense, was terrible last year. We had all the other teams in the top 50, many of them pretty high up. Even like, you know, Virginia, yeah, they were 3 seed making it to Omaha, but we had them as a top 10 team in the preseason. So they're just kind of finally hitting their stride. Stanford came out of nowhere. They had not the easiest regional, like a solid regional. They had to face UC Irvine, Big West champ. But I think that super regional matchup looked like something that I didn't think the Cardinal was going to be able to handle. Having to head to Lubbock, play Texas Tech is obviously, I mean, Texas Tech has had 4 supers there, has won all 4 of those supers. They just had beaten the weekend before UCLA in the regional there. And I think that I kind of expected Texas Tech to do what Texas Tech does in Lubbock and win another super. But Stanford swept them, and like Texas Tech, like, got knocked down in round 1 and never got off the mat. Like, they just did not show up to their own super regional. I mean, credit has to go to Brendan Beck and Alex Williams, the 2 Stanford starters. Williams did threw a complete game in game 2, a 2-hitter, just totally stifled Texas Tech. Similar to NC State, that Stanford team is not a team with a ton of arms, but when you only have to throw 3 guys in a weekend, like, their lack of depth there did not get exposed.
Yeah, that definitely helps. Yeah, that was surprising too, just like the way Tech got beat down. Like, they, I think it was 15-3 in game, no, that was game 1. Yeah, I expected just some fight from Tech, like offensively, at least in their own ballpark. They're a really good offensive team, but yeah, I mean, hats off to Stanford pitchers who, like, we're usually that's who we're expecting to do well, and it was both. It was kind of a complete game domination there.
Yeah, I love the like quote from Brendan Beck. At least it was attributed to him, and I hope it
was looking for that.
Yeah, it was on game 1. It's like 106 degrees in Lubbock or whatever it is, like that ridiculous heat wave going through Texas, and Stanford comes out in all blacks. And Beck, the starting pitcher, got to choose the uniforms. And he's like, I wanted to wear black because we're showing up to Texas Tech's funeral. He's like, dang, that's hardcore.
That's great.
Yeah. And like, and he backed it up. Like, right? It's different if you go out and get like smoked, but they won game 1 and he backed it up a little bit. So, I mean, that guy, Beck, is clearly a leader for Stanford. He's a senior. He's a guy that could have gotten drafted in the 5-round draft last year for sure. If it had been 40 rounds, he would have been drafted probably in the next few rounds. So like, Stanford getting him back was really big for the Cardinal. Clearly a leader both on the mound, but in trash talking as well.
Yeah, that's some grade A trash talking. Grade 80, I guess.
80 grade. Yeah, we use a scouting scale here on trash talk. So. Right. I think there's like a couple other storylines. I mean, we can't ignore what fans did. I mean, at the beginning of the year, we just didn't know if fans were going to be able to go to any games, and come super regionals, fans showed up both in seats and on couches. Ratings for super regionals were some of the best we've seen for super regionals in a while. And Mississippi State set multiple records over the weekend, including single game for a super regional, which is over 14,000. And I think they also have the other like 4 top 5 records. So like, I haven't looked far that far down the list, but basically Mississippi State has all those records. And then on the weekend, over 40,000 people were at the Starkville super regional. So, I mean, yeah, that's pretty impressive. A question that we have right now up polling on our Twitter is, of the 8 fan bases in Omaha, who's the best fan base? And I don't want to like put you on the spot and make you make some enemies right now, but like, which fan base do you think is going to have the biggest impact of the 8 teams in Omaha? Because we've seen some things like Tennessee, like, definitely smaller stadium, doesn't have quite the crowds, but the crowd that has showed up this year has been an intense crowd. And then obviously goes without saying, Mississippi State. Texas always travels pretty well. Like, there's Texas fans that just manage to make it all the way around the country. Who are your thoughts? Who's going to have the biggest impact in Omaha?
Well, yeah, usually like it could go either way. Like, there's a lot of Omaha locals who end up rooting for like underdogs here. And there's a lot of power conference teams in this. So there's not really an underdog. I guess if you're going by seeding, it's Virginia, but they won the national championship 6 years ago.
it's really not genuine to say that Virginia is an underdog in this. Like, right. They were a top 10 team. They're going to have multiple guys drafted in the first few rounds of the MLB draft. Like coming,
and they won
the
championship 6 years ago.
Yeah, they just won a national championship. If you just look at their, like, first month of the season, you might think of them as an underdog. But we know that Virginia belongs, and they're going to be on the same talent level. They're no Fresno State or anything like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, there's teams like Tennessee hasn't been in like 16 years to Omaha. NC State hasn't been since 2013, I think. So some of those teams that have been really close, that are like really hungry, or some of those fan bases that are like really hungry, like NC State, for example, I think they could travel well and get a lot of like local support, which is really what matters. But like, I don't know, Texas has been to Omaha so many times. I feel like a lot of Texas residents just moved up there, or like they have a satellite campus there in Omaha.
Yeah, but I was thinking that too. Like, do you think Mississippi State fans are like bored with it? Or it's third straight year they made it to Omaha. Like, is
absolutely
this year?
Not.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, there's no way. Like, I think they can make it to Omaha 50 straight years and they would still probably have a great crowd there. Like,
absolutely, yeah.
They love their baseball, especially until they win a national championship. I mean, imagine you're a Mississippi State fan who's there for that baseball national championship. Like, that's like, Every Mississippi State fan wants to be that fan. So I think they're going to have a good
time. I think so too. Yeah. I mean, and we've seen Tennessee be pretty rowdy. I think it could be interesting. Like that Tennessee Virginia game is going to be, it's going to be fun to watch.
And like, anytime we talk about best fan bases, I feel like oftentimes it kind of moves into like a discussion on largest fan bases, which is definitely part of being a good fan base. Like having more fans, it makes like the whole fan base better, right? But when I think about like who are the best fans that are going to be here, like I feel like we need to rethink this question. Because like, for instance, if you're a fan of like Stanford baseball, you're probably a pretty darn committed fan. And the average quality of that fan is going to be pretty good, because like in terms of quantity, Stanford doesn't have it. But like, it's a lot easier to be a casual like Texas fan than it is to be a Stanford fan, I would say.
So you're claiming that Texas has a lot of t-shirt fans, huh?
No. I'm just saying that when you have 40,000 or 50,000 students and just a lot of people, like you're buying into like a brand. And also it's just like in the culture in Texas to like sports and to like baseball. Like you go out to like, you know, Stanford, or if you're like Vanderbilt or something, like a place like these private schools that don't have super strong histories of sports being important. Like those fans, I would say not high quantity, but like, I gotta imagine there's some high quality fans at those schools.
Yeah. You definitely know your stuff at that point if you're this committed.
Yeah, for sure.
And then like, I think you appreciate certain aspects of fan bases more than I do, but when there are fan bases that are like so quick to jump on like the throats, jump down the throats of people who like have one negative thing to say or don't have everything glowing to say about their team, that bothers me a little bit. And that, like, I don't know. I feel like all of the teams in the Southeast, like if someone doesn't mention their team in like glowing reviews section, then they're like, why do you hate my team?
Yeah. I think that with large fan bases come, like, you're more likely to get the outliers in those fan bases. With that said though, like, so I spent a lot of time perusing Twitter, right? Especially college baseball Twitter. And I would say the like grace that which Arkansas fans handled the super regional loss was exceeded expectations, because
that's good.
Like, I thought that like almost all of the messaging that I saw around that was basically like, feel so bad for these guys and supporting players, which it's not easy to do that if your team just lost and was the prohibitive favorite to win the national championship. So hats off to Arkansas fans. I thought they did a pretty good job of things. I think there was a little bit of commiserating as they saw Ole Miss and LSU get eliminated too. That might have been helpful.
That does help a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. But let's look ahead. Like, the past is the past. I think that's enough time spent on the Super Regionals, because we have the College World Series starting on Saturday with Bracket 1. And I want to go through and pick out at least a storyline or two for some of these different matchups that we have, and then go ahead and try to pick some bracket winners. Game 1, we have NC State and Stanford. which I think is an interesting matchup. Stanford just had probably, I mean, NC State had the best super regional win, I would say, at Arkansas. Stanford probably had the second best at Texas Tech. So it's two teams that clearly just proved they belong here the weekend before. And it kind of has some similarities. Like, neither of them has pitching depth, and that probably won't get exposed day one of the tournament. But this is a game that both of them, if they're going to have long runs in the College World Series, you want to see those starters go in seven innings in this game. And losing this game for each of these teams is going to perhaps spell their doom, because I don't know if either of these teams can survive the loser's bracket.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that both of these teams have the lowest ERA of the teams remaining in Omaha, but similar batting averages and on-base percentages and things. Stanford's kind of like on the bottom end of that, like offensive wise, which is weird. Like, yeah, Stanford,
they don't hit for average, but they hit for power.
Right. Yeah. Their slugging percentage is, it's like fifth of this group, but this group is also a really offensive group, so it's kind of hard to tell.
Yeah. And it's always interesting to see, because your home stadium plays a big factor in all these numbers. Right. So I think Stanford's ballpark is a little bit more of a pitcher's park. So is that ERA a little bit, you know, underinflated, and are there power numbers? No, wait, other way around. Their ERA might actually be lower than how good their pitchers are, and their batting might be a little bit better. With that said, though, they just went to Lubbock, a really offensive place, and both their offense showed up and their pitching showed up, and all it takes is just to have some hot arms.
Right, and we know TD Ameritrade plays really offensively, or no, not really, it plays like a really good pitcher's park, and teams that usually hit a lot of home runs end up hitting more doubles and triples because it's a really deep park. So yeah. Stanford has hit a lot of home runs, not as many doubles and triples, but some of those home runs could turn into doubles and triples. And then, yeah, you get runners on the bases and who knows.
All right, let's take a stab at picking this game. I think I'm leaning Stanford in this one. I really, really could see it going either way. And that's in large part, I think it's going to take something like Brendan Beck going seven innings in this, and then like a Brock Jones home run, and that's the difference in the game or something, or, you know, like a little bit of an inning gets put together, maybe a couple doubles, Christian Robinson, Brock Jones, back-to-back doubles, and that's all it is. Like, I could see this being a 1-0, 2-0, 3-1 game. I'm going Stanford on this one, I think.
I could see this being like 11-10 or something.
Yeah, just because we have said that. Anytime you predict a pitcher's duel, it's like the rules of baseball. The baseball gods come in and say, well, some talking head said this was going to be a pitcher's duel, so I got to make it a slugfest.
Well, now that we have both out there, then we're good.
Yeah. Do we have the anti-jinx? You got to keep it even there.
Right. Do we have projected starters for this game? I don't think we do. I mean, Brian Beck is.
So we're recording this on Thursday. I haven't seen any projected starters. I'm just going with what I think is going to happen.
Got it.
I think that everyone's going to be throwing their aces out game one. That's just the expectation, because the way that the College World Series sets up in like comparison to a regional, the regionals are played, you know, Thursday through Sunday, Monday, but the College World Series bracket is played Saturday all the way until the next Saturday. So you have a little bit of extra rest built in there. So I think generally the advantage is throw your best guys first, because you might be able to sneak them in on short rest again if you have to. So
yeah, that makes sense. But that's, I'm gonna NC State here. I don't know. I think Stanford has a chance. I mean, both these teams obviously have a chance, but I think I just like NC State's, they're on a really good streak, and I like their offense a lot.
You know, depending on how you count that Cal series that Stanford had earlier, so they lost 2 out of 3 at Cal and then played game 4 at Stanford, which they won. If you count that as a series split, which I personally don't, I still think that's a series loss plus a one-off non-conference. But let's just say you do, because a lot of people say that counts as a series split. Stanford still hasn't lost a series all year. Like,
really?
Nobody's beaten them. So, but also with that said, they didn't sweep a lot of games, and they don't, and that's or a lot of series, and that's because they don't have
any series.
So it's gonna be difficult for them to make a run, I think. Mm-hmm. In any individual game, especially early on, I think Stanford has an edge. So
yeah, Stanford,
but That one, yeah, this one feels like a coin flip for sure. Actually, you know, I'm looking through these and none of these feel like there's heavy favorites. I mean, that's true. Omaha. We're in Omaha with like eight talented teams, which it doesn't happen every year. And this is going to be some of the highest quality baseball, I think, that we're going to have. Obviously, we're missing out on a couple top teams here, but this should be really good quality baseball.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Like, I think you mentioned at one point during the season, Stanford lost a lot of game ones and ended up winning the series a lot of times. There's like a streak of that. Go ahead.
They've just had like inconsistency in their bullpen, basically. So even when Brendan Beck went and had a great start, I think they've done a better job of finding bullpen arms they trust, but that's still a pretty small list. Like, they have Zach Gretsch, who's like probably top, one of the best closers in the Pac-12. They have Palish, who's reasonably consistent, but it's kind of like these guys are a little bit of the exception that proves the rule. Like, when you can kind of list off some of the bullpen arms that you trust, there's generally a longer list of bullpen arms that you don't trust very much. Right. Like, for instance, Mississippi State, you look at the bullpen, you're like, I'll pick any of them, and they're throwing 95 and they probably can keep you in the game. So like, that's not what Stanford has.
All right.
Let's hop down to game two. Yeah, Vanderbilt, Arizona, in the matchup. Is this fair to say these are the two best offenses in the
series? Yes, these are have the best batting average, on base percentage, and slugging percentage. It's one and two, like, for all three of those. Arizona has the best of these eight teams in Omaha. They hit home runs like crazy.
This is kind of fun. We're going to get kind of like a little of an experiment here, like what plays pitching or offense, because we got a pitching versus pitching matchup in game one, and now here's an offense versus offense matchup, and let's see who wins this bracket now. We'll take the best pitching team, move them on, best offensive team, move them on, and get them at each other and see what happens.
What I want to see is this Vanderbilt-Arizona, like play three games in this bracket. That'd be really fun to see. I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about because, I mean, yeah, Stanford, NC State as a whole, their stats are pretty good on pitching, but the two individual best pitchers in Omaha are on Vanderbilt. I think that's fair to say. Rocker and Leiter are the two best guys in Omaha, and the way that the College World Series sets up, probably Rocker's going on Saturday, kind of regardless of what happens. Leiter's probably going on Monday. If Vanderbilt wins both of those games, they wouldn't have to play again until Friday, and you got to kind of start doing the like chalkboard calculus of like, would they rest or would they throw Rocker again on shorter rest on that Friday, things like that. But before any of that can work, Vanderbilt has to get through to the winner's bracket, and so that's what's really interesting to see about this, because I don't know if Rocker has faced an offense as prolific as Arizona. I mean, really, I don't think anyone has faced an offense as prolific as Arizona unless you've played Arizona. I think they might have been the most prolific offense in the country.
Yeah, that's possible. But, I mean, also don't sleep on Vanderbilt. They had, I think they had the highest team WOBA in the SEC regular season, like before the NCAA tournament and everything. I haven't done all the stats after that, but, like, that's insane. Like, those are, I mean, usually, like, the thing to talk about is Rocker and Leiter with them, and most people just kind of stop from there. But like, they have an insane offense that is one of the best in the country also. So this is two good, like really, really good offenses going at it in a game that I hope is 11-10 or 16-17, something like that. That'd be great.
In that prediction, do you have Rocker giving up like eight runs, or is it all of the bullpen?
All of the bullpen, yeah. All right. It's a 0-0 shutout for the first six innings, and then it's electric after that.
Yeah, if it's 0-0, that means Arizona's ace, Chase Silseth, has probably had one of the best games of the year, because I think his earned run average, I think, is hovering above four the last time I saw. And he's more of a get you to the bullpen kind of guy and hope your offense shows up. So this feels like one that could set up for Vanderbilt jumping out ahead on him, and then Arizona makes a comeback. And I think my favorite idiom of the year is there's no lead that is safe against Arizona. Like, I would never turn off an Arizona game unless they're down by like 40 runs, because even like 8-10 runs, that this Arizona offense is good enough to come back on. But I think it's going to be a little bit of a pitch count game. Like, if they can, like, this is a fairly patient Arizona team in terms of swinging and miss. Like, they're not going to swing and miss at stuff outside the zone. But Rocker, we've seen, can fill up the strike zone. So it's going to be kind of a little bit of a little bit of a battle there. Can Arizona actually extend Rocker's pitch count? Can Arizona get runs off of him? I mean, obviously that's the key there. If they can get him out of the game early, I think huge advantage Arizona.
Yep.
All right, let's pick it. Who do you have?
Oh man, give me Arizona here. It's tough.
It's literally, in my opinion, which Chase Zilseth shows up. If he goes five innings, gives up one or two runs, Arizona's probably going to win. If he gets rocked for four runs in the first inning, which he has this year, and not always against the top quality opponents, I think Vanderbilt wins by 1,000. So with that said, he's been trending in the right direction. And even then, I'm picking Vanderbilt.
Yeah, that's fair. I probably should pick Vanderbilt, but just my gut tells me Arizona's going to win. And then Vanderbilt could win the next two against Arizona if they end up meeting three times. But yeah, I don't know.
All right, let's pick a bracket winner now. So we just picked game ones for each of those. So, I mean, I'm having Stanford and Vanderbilt match up in the winner's bracket. So I'm probably going to pick one of those. I think it's going to be tough for NC State to get out of the loser's bracket. And I think overall, I mean, the safe bet in this bracket is Vanderbilt, especially if they stay in the winner's bracket. I think it's going to be really tough to beat them because they're going to be able to get probably Rocker back for game three. And they might be able to pitch Rocker Light or Rocker games one, two, and three and be in the College World Series. And if they can do that, or sorry, in the College World Series finals, and like that's a daunting task, I think, for any team to be able to overcome that. I think the only thing that could keep Vanderbilt out, in my opinion, not the only thing, I think one, like, they can't afford an injury to one of those guys. Like, you mm-hmm. know, if there's an injury in game one to Rocker, all of a sudden that's a huge, I don't think Vanderbilt can win the national championship, but give me Vanderbilt right now.
Yeah. I know that I picked Arizona in the game one, but I still think like Vanderbilt has the pitching depth. Like if you can pitch Rocker again in that third game or fourth game, I don't know how that would work.
Well, I think it's tricky. If they get in the loser's bracket, instead of waiting till Friday to play, they would have to play again
Wednesday.
On Wednesday. So yeah, that would be really short rest to go Saturday to Wednesday. So
yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I still think Vanderbilt will win this, but I have Arizona as my runner up here.
This feels a little bit like a cop out. Yeah, you went bold on your first pick, and now you're not going bold for the rest of it.
Well, yeah, exactly.
All right, so
there's no stakes here.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to bracket two: Tennessee and Virginia. I would say of any of these games, this feels like the one where we have the most heavy of favorite. With Tennessee has just been so consistent all year, only losing a couple series, being really competitive in the SEC, doing really well in a fairly challenging regional, pretty casual super regional against LSU for them, absolutely blasting the ball out of Lindsey Nelson Stadium. That probably won't translate to Omaha, but the hard hit contact will translate. Virginia is obviously playing really well. They won two out of three against Dallas Baptist to get here in the super regional. And generally that was a pretty high quality super with a lot of really good defense and some timely hitting. I think in my mind, Tennessee though is the clear favorite in this matchup. I don't know if you agree.
Yeah, I think I agree. I'm just going over some Tennessee pitchers. Like they have a really good bullpen. Like there's some pitchers who have made a few starts for them. I think that I can't really tell it. It looks like some of those were in the postseason. But like they have two top 10 pitchers amongst the players that are in Omaha in WHIP. So walks plus hits per inning pitched. So like that's a really good bullpen. You really don't want your bullpen pitchers to give up walks or hits or anything. And so like really anything, but walks or hits are like what they can control. So Yeah, I really like their pitching staff as a whole, and I think they have a really good offense too. Like they've been on a really good tear lately. So, but it's hard to pick against Virginia too. I don't know. Like Virginia's playing insanely well right now. Their offense on the year has not been very good, but I think that's because like it started off on a not a very good start, and so like it's been if I could see like splits basically starting in like April or May, then maybe this would be one of the hottest offenses in the country. I can't tell.
Yeah. I'm looking through now top 10 whip of any pitchers. And there's some really interesting names on here. So Stanford's two first starters are both on here. Brandon Beck and Alex Williams. Not surprisingly, Rocker and Leiter are both on here, but yeah, Camden Sewell and Sean Hundley are both sub 0.9 in whip. Texas has a couple guys here, Tristan Stevens and Pete Hansen.
Cole Quintanilla.
Yeah, it seems like the quality pitching is kind of condensed on a handful of teams. Evan Justice, though, from NC State, one of the like absolutely ridiculous hurlers who just totally dominated Arkansas coming out of the bullpen. Yeah, I think I'm curious to see, like you're saying, how Virginia's offense shows up. The Geloff brothers have had a really great postseason so far, and I definitely think they're going to be competitive. But I'm picking Tennessee. You're picking Tennessee?
I am, yeah.
All right, let's move on. I think this one is one, I think this might be my favorite matchup of the opening round, Texas versus Mississippi State. Because this feels like two teams that the winner of this is going to have a huge leg up, obviously, get into the winner's bracket. And it really feels like one of these two teams could win a national championship. Like this could be like a, like these clearly are two of the class of Omaha. Texas has had a really easy path to the College World Series, which it's not exactly through any fault of their own. It's not their fault that Florida and Miami totally laid an egg in the Gainesville Regional. And they've played who they've played. They went 5-0 in their first two rounds of the playoffs. And now they get a Mississippi State team that is clearly on a different level from South Florida, who they just played. Mississippi State is the type of team that it feels like they're a little bit of an afterthought in the SEC so far this year. I mean, if you even think about coming into the postseason, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Arkansas were probably all seen as higher favorites than Mississippi State. But here they are now for the third straight year and a chance to win that coveted national title they haven't been able to get. Who do you like, Texas or Mississippi State?
Oh, I think I like Mississippi State here. It's funny, this is the first game of the season for maybe any game? I don't actually know. No, it wouldn't have been any game. But the Texas and Mississippi State played in that first game of the State Farm College Baseball Showdown.
That feels like a lifetime ago.
It doesn't it?
That feels like so long ago.
Yeah. Mississippi State won that game 8-3. I was looking the other way around. Texas got swept in that by SEC teams, but they don't get to face the other Arkansas at Ole Miss. So it's good for them, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think Texas is playing really well. They also haven't played really good teams in a while. Like the last good team that they've played was probably Oklahoma State, and they lost that in the conference tournament. It was just a one game off. But yeah, it's been a long time since that TCU series where they won in Fort Worth. That was a month and a half ago now.
It really feels like this. My gut is which Texas offense shows up is going to be the difference maker here. Mm-hmm. They had to walk off South Florida in that first game of the Super Regional. They haven't been the most offensively prolific team. I mean, the last good offensive game they had was probably against Fairfield, who I think had like 10 walks in that game, something like that. So it's like, thanks. Part of that is, yeah, Texas is a patient team that draws some of the most walks in the country, but I think part of that was that Fairfield started a pitcher who hadn't started the entire year in that game. So Fairfield
ran out of pitching at that point.
They had run out of arms. Yeah. So I don't know. My gut is that if the Texas offense shows up, that can do time, like has timely hitting, has patience, that has just enough power to drive some balls in the gap, Texas is going to win this. Oh, I really want to pick Texas to win this, but my gut is telling me Mississippi State. My gut is often wrong, so I'm going to go Texas.
Yeah, I mean, this Texas pitching staff has, I think they have the best team ERA in the country, like even before, like including everything. They have a lot of really, really good pitchers, and their ballpark sets up kind of like TD Ameritrade. It's really deep park.
Used to playing in this ballpark, basically. It's not the same, but you're right. It's pretty darn similar.
Yeah, it's set up in a similar way, and I think TD Ameritrade is grass, not turf. I think people would riot if it was turf.
Oh yeah, it's the real stuff.
Yeah. I mean, this, like, Cole Quintanilla out of the bullpen has the second lowest ERA and second lowest WHIP in this group here. They have Pete Hansen and Ty Madden. I mean, like, I know it's not the same, but like Pete Hansen, yeah. Ty Madden, and Tristan Stevens, like maybe Tristan Stevens and Ty Madden, is that like, that's like
Tanner Witt,
second best 1 and 2 in the country? Like, yeah, I don't know. Like, you got Rocker Leiter.
Texas has some elite bullpen arms too. Like, yeah. Texas has the pitching staff to compete for, like, of all of these teams, you know, Texas definitely feels like one that if they had to come out of a loser's bracket, like, they would be able to do it. They have pitching depth.
Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting because this, I think conventional wisdom says that the teams that do the best in Omaha have the best pitching depth, but lately it seems like it's just been the best offenses. Like, I know that's, it's not binary, like either offense or pitching, but yeah. It seems like the better offenses have been doing well lately. And that bodes well for a lot of these teams that are in Omaha now.
Someone needs to check the baseballs, because I swear they must be juiced in the postseason, because we've had just a ridiculous number of home runs.
Yeah, they add a few more BBs in those bats. And
that's how it works.
Yeah, I think that's how that works. So, yeah, give me Mississippi State. You said you're taking Texas.
I'm taking Texas. I think I'm taking Tennessee to get out of this bracket, which in my prediction sets up an all-Tennessee college
World Series
final. I'm doing Vanderbilt, Tennessee. Which would just be the best.
That'd be really cool. That'd be really cool.
I would love that rematch.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have Mississippi State. I picked Mississippi State to be the runner-up, like to make it to the College World Series final and lose that series to Arkansas when I, like, at the beginning of the tournament. I think I'm sticking with Mississippi State getting out of this bracket. And that would be Vandy and Mississippi State for me and all SEC. And also all SEC champ final. For that, I don't know if Vandy has to come out of the loser's bracket and pitch like Rocker or Leiter in one of those other games, I don't know how many times that would work out to line up. Like, if you could get Rocker and Leiter in game 1 and 2 of that final, I don't know if that would work out, but.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot tougher to set up their pitching because they're going to be playing a lot more games. And they're going to have to rely on someone like Christian Little showing up and having a 5-inning start and saving the bullpen, because really out of the bullpen there for Vanderbilt, I mean, Maldonado is kind of a class above everyone else in that Vanderbilt bullpen. And if you're going 4 or 5 games in order to win a national championship, it's going to be a lot tougher if you're running out those bullpen arms early on. It does feel like Vanderbilt, the second they lose a game, if they do, that bracket 1 is just wide open. Like, it just feels like any team from that bracket can win if Vanderbilt loses. I don't think the same can be said for bracket 2. I feel pretty confident that bracket 2 is a little bit tougher. And, you know, the winner of Texas Mississippi State is going to be really, really tough. And assuming, which is not necessarily going to happen, but if Tennessee wins that, you know, it feels like either of those teams then would be a huge challenge for Tennessee. And Virginia, like, I've been kind of discounting them. They're 6-0 in elimination games in the postseason. Like, they have found a way to win. Yeah, like they have been on the edge. Like they aren't going to be at all like shy about playing the underdog role. They could lose that game one to Tennessee 10-0 and Virginia still can make it out of that bracket.
I think that's what they thrive. They're like, all right, we need to lose that game. Just one, and they crack their knuckles and they get down to business.
I mean, that's basically how they played the entire second half of their season, where like you're doing math of like, how the heck are they going to get to 500 in ACC play? Because they're six games below 500 right now, and there's no way they're even going to make the tournament. And, you know, lo and behold, they landed in Omaha yesterday and the whole team's there now. So it's,
Who's your runner up in this bracket too?
I'm saying that Mississippi State. No, I'm going probably Tennessee over Texas, in the final.
Okay.
I want the battle of all the UTs. I want to see who the real orange UT is on the baseball diamond. But yeah, I'm going the Tennessee Vanderbilt College World Series final.
All right. Yeah, I think my runner up would also be, or my runner up would be Tennessee, I think. Yeah. And I'm not trying to discount Texas. Like they have the pitching depth to do it. I just don't know if they have the offense. Like if you can get a really good Ivan Melendez and a few other pieces going, like you don't need many runs for them. For their pitchers, like if it's every game is like 3-2, then maybe. But if they start letting up a few extra runs here and there, like I think they'd be in trouble at that point.
It does feel like for some of these teams, it's which one of them shows up,
right?
Which Vanderbilt shows up? Is it the Vanderbilt that has a lockdown rocker lighter, which has been Vanderbilt for most of the year? If that's the case, that's going to be a really tough team to eliminate. But if the Arizona team shows up that's had just enough pitching all year, you know, all of a sudden they're a really serious threat there. Which Texas offense shows up? Which Virginia shows up? The team that hardly looked capable in the sport of baseball for the first 2 months of the year, despite having some of the best talent in the country, just horrible swing and miss, no, like a terrible approach at the plate, to now all of a sudden a team that's clicking on offense and on the mound. That's what makes this exciting. You know, any of these teams, I feel like you can poke at and point at some weaknesses. And really the only team that was hard to find that sort of weakness with was Arkansas. They didn't have the starting pitching depth, but ultimately that's not what actually got Arkansas. But this feels both amazingly deep College World Series field and a fairly wide open College World Series field.
That's when it's the best. You don't want to have someone who waltzes to the final.
Yeah, and we got a nice, I mean, all power conference teams, but we got a nice mix of three SEC teams, two Pac-12, two ACC, Big 12, and this just feels like a really, like, if you're going to win this national championship, you're going to, like, earn it. This is going to be a one that doesn't have any sort of asterisks next to it, so.
Some stats, though. There have been, the last 14 tournaments, there have been four teams to go 5-0 in Omaha. Three of those teams went 5-0 also in the super regional and regional round. So three teams have gone 10-0 in Omaha and won the whole thing out of the last 14 tournaments. And then Oregon State in 2007 went 6-1 in the regionals. So 6-1 and 5-0. So like that's not a lot of teams.
Who's left that can do that? Texas is 5-0 so far.
I was trying to pull that up.
No, they went the distance with Notre Dame. Virginia, obviously not. Tennessee is 5-0. Arizona, they went the distance with Ole Miss. Vanderbilt just swept ECU, and I think they swept their regional.
That is true, yes. Arizona went the distance. Sanford lost a game.
Yep.
And the NC State also lost a game. Yeah, that's it. So who did we say? Tennessee, Texas,
Vanderbilt. Andy?
And those are the three of the four teams that we picked to be in the final.
Yeah, it's crazy how good teams tend to win lots of games.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
All right, Kyle.
Two, three, and four seed.
Any closing thoughts on how this tournament's going to go?
I expect a lot of fun. I expect a lot of
hot takes here only. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I expect a lot of left field sucks, right field sucks from both the right field and the left field. Are they doing general admission? I've been seeing some tweets about it, but I haven't really been able to pay attention.
I think so.
Okay.
I remember that guy 2 years ago at the World Series who caught that foul ball barehanded and then just downed his beer.
It's
a reappearance.
Did you see the other day the Virginia fan who was recording, like, he was recording the game?
Oh, yeah, that was ridiculous.
He was just like,
Baptist home run.
Yeah. Yeah, he was recording the game from the outfield, just for, like, no reason, just kind of like seeing what's going on. And no, there was a home run.
He was premonition for sure. He was just like, it's coming at me. willed it into existence.
He had a glove on his left hand, phone in his right hand, reached up and caught the home run and like filmed it. And yeah, NCAA tweeted it. It was really cool. It was a really cool story.
I feel like the quality of the video and the catch combo is pretty darn impressive.
Yeah.
We have it somewhere on our Twitter page. So if you haven't seen it yet, go search through our tweets and you'll find it. But it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was really cool. That was really cool.
All right. Well, thanks for leaving us with that hot take of lots of fun at the College World Series. Kyle, thanks for joining as always.
Of course.
Looking forward to a great week. Thanks for listening to the College Baseball Nation podcast. If you haven't already, subscribe on whatever podcast listener you're listening to on right now. You can follow us on social media at collegeballnat. And you can find all of our College World Series coverage on our website, collegebaseball.info. Thanks again for listening and have a great week.